Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
We begin with a story from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, about a possible name change for Kingston's downtown arena venue.
At tonight's City Council meeting, councillors will be considering a new naming rights partner for the large entertainment venue on the Tragically Hip Way. The venue is currently known as the Leon Centre and has been since 2018, but it may take on a new name beginning in January of 2024. The venue serves as the home for the Ontario Hockey League's Kingston Frontenacs, while also hosting many events and concerts. With a seating capacity of 5,000 for sporting events and 6,700 for concerts, it has been the site of many large-scale events. Bidding for naming rights took place over the summer, with applications being accepted until the end of August. Tonight, councillors will consider a 15-year agreement with Slush Puppy Canada Incorporated. The agreement would span 15 years, worth $135,000 per year, with a total of $2,025,000 over the period of the contract. Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Kingston, Lainey Hurdle, stated, quote, "The large venue entertainment center has a history of naming rights partners since its opening in 2008. We look forward to the continued animation of this incredible venue through the well-established, family-friendly Slush Puppy brand, and to working alongside the Slush Puppy team in partnership with the Kingston Frontenacs." If the terms of the agreement are accepted this evening, the arena will officially be dubbed Slush Puppy Place in 2024. This will be the second venue in Canada named after Slush Puppy, with the first being Slush Puppy Centre in Gatineau. Jean-Roch Baudin, president of Slush Puppy Canada, states, quote, "For nearly 50 years, Slush Puppy has been part of Canada's hockey heritage. This partnership highlights the long-standing love story between Slush Puppy and sports fans and participants from coast to coast to coast. It is an honor for Slush Puppy Canada to partner with the City of Kingston, a community rich in history. This second Slush Puppy venue will continue to serve as a hub for sporting events, concerts, and cultural experiences, contributing to the vibrancy of the Kingston community," end quote.
Thank you, Chris. And now over to CFRC LJI News producer Jesse Bell with a story from YGK News Local Journalism Initiative reporter Owen Fullerton about a student-led protest during the recent Queen's University Town Hall led by Queen's University Provost Matthew Evans.
Thank you, Dinah. A town hall led by Queen's Provost Matthew Evans and Dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences Barbara Crow was interrupted by student protesters on Monday, December 11. The event, which was not open to Queen's students, featured a silent student protest during the question and answer period. At the town hall, students were told that Provost Evans will attend a meeting in the new year of the Arts and Science Undergraduate Assembly and the Alma Mater Society. But some feel that the university is intentionally trying to avoid keeping the students in the loop. One such individual is Ethan Chilcott with the group Queen Students vs. Cuts. Chilcott said that student voices were not being heard, and noted that there is a great deal of uncertainty for current and future students, which he believes will have an adverse effect on admission rates. Chilcott was quoted as saying, "People are potentially rejecting offers from other universities to come to Queen's. What they advertise is small class sizes, individualized learning, and strong arts, but none of this stuff will exist in the future." During the town hall, Provost Evans said that he regularly has meetings with student representatives and reiterated that there would be an opportunity in the new year to hold more of these meetings, but the town hall was planned to be staff only. The provost told faculty that without immediate action, the university will run out of its reserves in 2 years' time, and that the Faculty of Arts and Science will run through reserves as soon as next year. He said that tapping into reserved revenues to offset the operating budget deficit would be short-sighted, and difficult decisions are required to avoid catastrophe. Provost Evans stated that he was concerned about the survival of Queen's, and that if budgetary concerns were not solved, the university could, quote, go under. Evans added that while the projected operating budget deficit was decreased from over $62 million to $48 million, the Faculty of Arts and Sciences' estimated share of that increased from $27 million to $37 million. The provost said there will be cross-subsidizing from other faculties to keep courses afloat, but which courses will make the cut is based on a value system that nobody is able or willing to identify. The Queen's Alma Mater Society stated that Provost Evans has formally agreed to attend the AMS Assembly, where students will be able to ask questions and voice their concerns. The AMS has also created a question form for students that would prefer to submit their questions anonymously. Over to Dinah Jansen for a story from the Kingstonist's local journalism initiative reporter, Michelle Dory Forestell, about a grievance filed by the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario against the Limestone District School Board.
Thank you, Jesse. The Limestone District School Board has lost its bid to dismiss a grievance against a local principal. The grievance was filed by the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario and alleged the principal of École James R. Henderson Public School abused their management rights by purposely placing teachers in unfavorable teaching assignments to force them to retire, resign, or transfer. In the spring, principals in each school are responsible for assigning teachers to their grades and other teaching assignments. Per the LDSB collective agreement, teachers submit preferences that are considered by the principals before assignments for the coming September are finalized. The preferences are not guaranteed. In her arbitration ruling, Paula Knopf recounted the specifics of the grievance, noting that in May of 2023, the principal of École James R. Henderson Public School assigned two teachers to grades that did not match their stated preferences. Knopf continued and wrote that these teachers attempted to persuade the principal to reassign them to the grades they had taught or been teaching in previous years. According to Knopf, on May 5, 2023, the principal sent out an email which outlined their rationale for the challenged assignment. The email ended with the principal writing the following, quote, "If you are wondering, no, I'm not trying to get you to transfer out, although if you chose to do so or look into a one-year exchange, I would completely understand," end quote. The principal then wrote, if this had been their goal, the teaching assignments would have been a dog's breakfast of planning time. Planning time refers to covering another teacher's classroom during the teacher's scheduled prep time. Knopf's decision explained that the principal's email came on the heels of a teacher's complaint about the principal's assignment and that, without that email, the EFTO could not have known about the alleged inappropriate motivations behind the principal's decisions and their impact on previous assignments. The grievance was filed on May 8, 2023, and requested several remedies that included a declaration that the LDSB had violated the collective agreement and relevant regulations, damages for the breach, the removal of the principal from leadership positions conditional on the completion of training in human rights and effective management practices, compensation for all affected teachers, and the undoing of grade placements for the 2023-24 school year for affected teachers. The LDSB argued that the grievance should be dismissed given that it occurred during previous school years, which meant that the challenge was either untimely or that the Federation had abandoned any possible right to grieve past events. Knopf noted that abuses of power can occur on an isolated basis or as part of a pattern, and that the wording and essence of the filing raised the specter of both possibilities. As such, Knopf felt that the past events were relevant to the grievance and dismissed the board's challenge. The teachers involved in the grievance were reassigned to alternative situations, which they accepted for the 2023-24 school year, and the grievance will now be heard by an independent arbitrator. Back over to Jesse with two stories, first by Keith Dempsey discussing a call made to increase tax credits for volunteer firefighters in the township of Leeds and Thousand Islands, and second by Philip Blanchard discussing the closure of a utility provider in South Dundas.
Thank you, Dinah. As reported by Keith Dempsey in the Brockville Recorder and Times, the municipality of Wawa has called on the federal government to increase tax credits for volunteer firefighters. The municipality is asking for an increase in the credits from $3,000 to $10,000 for people who complete at least 200 hours of volunteer time every year. This request was brought forward to the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands Town Council as information during a council meeting on Monday, December 11th. Councillor Jeff Lackey requested a letter of support from the township be sent to the municipality of Wawa in support of the increase. This proposal was unanimously approved by the council. Chief Administrative Officer for Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands, Stephen Donaghy, was quoted as saying that from a firefighter standpoint, it would certainly help to recognize their work and give them a nice incentive. Fire Chief Mike Pryor backed the increase and added that there's lots of fire departments out there that are not like Leeds. They do not compensate. Pryor elaborated, explaining that these departments don't compensate for fuel. They don't compensate for any of the clothing that people wear. Pryor ended his statement by declaring that an increase in tax credits would be a big thing to help those volunteers out within the province. We move now to a story by Philip Blanchet with the Morrisburg Leader, who is reporting that a utility partly owned by the municipality of South Dundas will be closing its doors in early 2024. Rideau St. Lawrence Distribution was formed in 2000 through the merger of the municipal electrical systems in Morrisburg, Iroquois, Williamsburg, Cardinal, Prescott, and Westport. Electric utility company Fortis Ontario owns 10% of Rideau St. Lawrence. Rideau St. Lawrence Distribution announced on December 6th that the company will close its Morrisburg office, located in the South Dundas Justice Building, effective March 8th, 2024. Rideau St. Lawrence CEO Simon Wu provided the municipality of South Dundas with a written letter outlining the utility's plans to not renew the lease in the new year. This letter fulfilled the 90-day notification requirement on the lease. Wu explained in the letter to customers that the decision to close the office was based on low customer traffic and limited demand for in-person service. Wu felt that the community had other, quote, convenient alternatives, which led to the decision to reevaluate RSL's viability. Wu stated that the low usage statistics in the community is what necessitated the closure. Quote, if we charge the direct cost of the Morrisburg satellite office to the customers utilizing it, the cost per customer would be equivalent to multiple months of their utility bill. In his letter to RSL customers, Wu wrote that the utility's commitment to delivering safe and reliable services will continue, and that some of the alternative payment services for customers who do not use online banking, like the RSL Dropbox, will remain operational for 6 months as the company assesses next steps. In a report to South Dundas Council at its December 11th meeting, South Dundas Chief Administrative Officer Tim Mills said that there are no long-term plans to change RSL's role with the municipal water billing operations. Mills' report also said that the lease termination, along with the closure of the Provincial Offenses Act satellite court, has resulted in more surplus space being available, and that the municipality will actively market the space once it becomes available. South Dundas Mayor Jason Broad, who serves on the RSL board as the municipality's representative, did not comment on the closure.
Thank you so much. Up next, we have a segment from CJAI Amherst Island Radio Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans with a report on proposed safety upgrades on Main Street in Bath, Ontario.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI Amherst Island Radio 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township will be entering into a design contract with AECOM Canada for the rehabilitation of Main Street in Bath. Council approved the preferred proponent and for staff to enter into the agreement at their December 11th meeting. The upgrades include pedestrian safety improvements and new active transportation infrastructure. The upgrades will span east from Centennial Park to the Eastern Village limit. Main Street in Bath is considered by the Ministry of Transportation to be a connecting link as it links two sections of provincial highway. The MTO's Connecting Link grant funding program provides funding to maintain roadways and drainage features within the right-of-way. In October 2022, Council received a report proposing an application to this program. In April of this year, the Township's application to Intake 8 of the MTO's Connecting Link funding program was approved. The maximum provincial funding available to the project under the current intake is just over $317,000. The funding will be used for the design, field investigation, and preparation of tender documents. According to their report, staff reviewed five proposals from potential proponents. Once they confirmed the mandatory technical requirements were met, each qualified proposal was evaluated based on a bid price and technical score. Councillor Lorna Willis notes concerns from the community.
This has the potential to be quite a controversial project because people in Bath are concerned about roundabouts versus stoplights and things like that.
As part of the conceptual design process, a review of the project area for compliance with the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disability Act will be completed. The township will then take the concept design to a County of Lennox and Addington Joint Advisory Accessibility Committee meeting for review and feedback on the design. Comments provided at the meeting will be incorporated into the design. Public information sessions will be held throughout the township once a concept design has been created for the project. Councillor Carol Parks notes the importance of public input.
This can have a potential for some to be a very contentious issue. So it will be important to get that public input and discussion moving forward.
A project page has been created on the township website and will be updated as the project moves forward. This site will act as the main channel through which the public can obtain information on the project. Project Supervisor Joseph Grattan speaks about the public information sessions and the information online.
So you have public engagement planned. It's allowed for within the contract itself. And as noted in the report, the initial meetings will be in the spring. The webpage, there's already a, it's mostly just a placeholder right now, but there already is an entry on the project's webpage. And then as we've hired the consultant and they work through the process, we'll start to update information.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Here again is Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans discussing the Loyalist Township Council's approval for the township's new multi-year accessibility plan.
Loyalist Township's multi-year accessibility plan for 2024 to 2028 has been approved. Council received and approved the plan at their final meeting of the year on December 11th. The plan is based on the five standards of the Integrated Accessibility Standards Regulation. These standards are information and communications, employment, transportation, design of public spaces, and customer service. Staff noted in the report that the goal of the plan is to identify, remove, and prevent barriers to people with disabilities. Members of the public were consulted through a survey that was available online and at township office locations from October 31st to November 10th. A total of 14 online responses were received, and the comments were reviewed by the township's internal accessibility working group. The plan was received by the Joint Accessibility Advisory Committee in October, and suggestions from the public were incorporated into the draft plan where applicable. Staff noted the plan was created using the responses gathered through the survey, responses received from their internal working group, and the Lennox and Addington Accessibility Advisory Committee. The plan outlines some key actions for the township for 2024 to 2028. These include an update to the accessible customer service policy, closed captioning for virtual council and committee meetings, a map of accessible locations in the township, accessible tours of township locations and facilities, training for new employees on the Integrated Accessibility Standards Regulation and the Ontario Human Rights Code, an upgrade of bus stops in the area, and a pilot program for accessible taxis on Route 10 in Amherst View. Councillor Paul Proderick noted he liked the layout of the new accessibility plan.
I like the idea of a more concise presentation of the document for residents because, let's face it, many people aren't going to read through.
Development Services Manager with the Economic Growth and Community Development Services Department, Andrea Furness, explains staff accessibility training.
That is part of the onboarding process with new staff. New employees do have to do their training through for AODA and customer service and through the human rights as well. So that is, but we want to do some refresher training. We think it's really important for employees who have been here a while to be refreshed on that and any new legislation. And we think it's really important to roll that out. But yes, even our volunteers have to be trained on AODA.
Furness noted how ongoing planning for sidewalks in the township ties into the accessibility plan.
Part of the work that is being done in Economic Growth and Community Development Services is the updating of our design guidelines, which will include a nod to the accessibility requirements there.
Deputy Clerk Angelique Cardinal describes the township's design standards for the new sidewalks.
It's in part of one of the goals or key actions that we do have in the next 4 years is to come up with a similar plan as some of the other larger cities have, like City of Kingston, City of London, for the design standards. So we would like to create something like that and then bring it forward for review. But we will be working on that in the next couple of years. It's in our key action items.
Councillor Carol Parks mentions the work that went into creating the plan and notes her excitement for the future.
All the work on this, I'm sure it took a lot of time and a lot of effort to put this in. And we'll be watching to see new developments as they come forward.
Staff noted in their report that there will be continuous review of the multi-year accessibility plan, and an annual report will be prepared for council to identify progress of the plan's implementation, accomplishments, and achievements. Compliance reports will also be submitted annually to the province of Ontario. For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you, Ted. We now move to our Local Journalism Initiative reporter from CJPE, Brenda Little, with her report on the finalized 2024 budget for Prince Edward County.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
The taxpayers of Prince Edward County are breathing a small sigh of relief as the 2024 budget deliberations resulted in a 5.4% increase, down from the proposed 12.7%. For the taxpayer, the increase translates into an additional $56.35 for each $100,000 in assessed value. Some of the good news is that the council approved the continuation of the Municipal Financial Relief Program, giving aid to low-income households. Qualified homeowners receive financial help with water bills or property taxes. Council learned revenue from STAs is down since the number has dropped from 904 to 838, and new construction is stagnant due to unavailability of service lots and high mortgage rates. The capital budget of $115.1 million for the coming year includes considerable roadwork, an emergency vehicle purchase, and improvement of municipal buildings, but a big chunk covers the $94.7 million for the redevelopment of McFarland Nursing Home if the provincial funding comes through. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you, Brenda. We will send it back over to Dinah Jansen for a note on holiday closures here in the city of Kingston.
Thank you, Jesse. In other local news, the City of Kingston and Utilities Kingston would like to remind residents about services and facilities that will be affected by holiday hours. Residents are notified that there will be no green bin, garbage, or recycling pickup on December 25th or 26th, and that collection will occur 2 days after your regularly scheduled collections. The Kingston Area Recycling Center for Recycling and Yard Waste sites will be closed December 25th and 26th. Real Christmas trees with ornaments and tinsel removed can be dropped off for free at the KARC at 196 Lappin's Lane after December 26th. For Kingston Transit Services, there will be regular weekday service on December 24th, no service on December 25th, and Boxing Day will have Sunday service except Route 18, which will operate on its regular weekly schedule. Queen's University routes will not run during the holiday break. Route 20 service will be paused from December 21st through January 8th, and Route 17 service will be paused from December 22nd through January 8th. The Kingston Access Bus Services schedule will also have limited service and hours on December 24th. There will be no on-road or office service on December 25th, and there will be limited on-road service from 6 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. and office service from 8 to 11 a.m. on December 26th. Utilities Kingston and Kingston Hydro Customer Service and Administration offices will be closed beginning at noon on December 22nd and remain closed December 25th and 26th. In the event of a utility emergency such as a gas smell, power outage, or a water main break, call the Utilities Kingston 24-hour number at 613-546-1181. Other holiday closure impacts on municipal offices and facilities include Kingston Frontenac Public Library branches, Artillery Park Aquatic Center, Invista Center, Kingston East Community Center, Rideau Heights Community Center and Library, Catarockway Community Center, and the Kingston Memorial Center, Center 70, Pump House Museum, the Market Wing Cultural Space, and the Tet Center. Please visit cfrc.ca/news for holiday closure dates and times for these offices and facilities. Now here's Jesse Bell with your CFRC Environment Canada weather report.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, December 21st, a high of -2 today with periods of sunshine throughout the day. However, it is going to get much colder overnight with a low of -7. This cold weather trend will not continue into the weekend, however. Friday, December 22nd, things are going to warm up just a bit, a high of -1 with some sunshine, and only going down to -3 overnight, so just a 2-degree variance. Saturday, December 23rd, we're actually going to have temperatures above freezing. It's going to be a high of 2 degrees and only an overnight low of -1. Christmas Eve, Sunday, December 24th, is looking like quite a warm day, all things considered. A high of 3 degrees and an overnight low of just 1. No precipitation predicted, just a mix of sun and clouds. So Sunday night, Santa's got a safe, sure shot to make his deliveries. And then Monday, December 25th, this will disappoint some, I'm sure. Not looking like
a white Christmas here in the Limestone City. Much more gray as we have got a high of 5 and a 60% chance of showers throughout the day. Tuesday, December 26th, Boxing Day looks very promising. 5 degrees, no precipitation, mostly cloud cover. A great day to get some shopping done. That concludes your Environment Canada Weather Report. This is Jesse Bell signing off and sending warm wishes to you during this holiday season.
And now I'm going to give you a brief rundown of some holiday-themed events occurring here in the city of Kingston. On Friday, December 22nd, check out Christmas Rock with the Andrew Mack Band at the Tiernanog. Tickets are available online at eventbrite.ca. The show is scheduled to begin at 9 p.m. and end around midnight. Check out Christmas with New Friends at La Vida Bistro Bar and Social on 1329 Gardner's Road as they are holding their Christmas with New Friends events. This is a holiday-themed social gathering featuring music from Tiana Miller. On Saturday, December 23rd, you could also check out the Young Petty Stones, who will be performing from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Cove Inn on 2 Bedford Street in Westport, Ontario. On Wednesday, December 27th, there is a free Lego building event being held at Staples on Gardner's Road from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., where kids will be able to build and take home one of 9 Lego toys. Also on Wednesday, December 27th, is the Meet the Wheel 2-Hour Pottery Wheel Workshop being held by Amaranth Stoneware. Amaranth Stoneware is located at Unit 7 at 745 Development Drive here in Kingston. This Meet the Wheel event is free of charge. This concludes your community events calendar for the week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to Dinah Jansen.
Thanks so much, and thank you for tuning into The Corridor. Just a note to our listeners that CFRC will air some holiday specials over the next week, and we will resume irregular programming in early January. In the meantime, don't forget to donate to CFRC via CFRC.ca to support our annual funding drive, and visit our new Facebook and Instagram pages at CFRC Music. From all of us at CFRC 101.9 FM, we wish you a safe, healthy, and happy holiday season. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.